Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Larry Kay, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. Today is Tuesday, May 7th, 2024, and today we are reading from the Big Book. We are currently in the chapter, There is a Solution. We are on page 18, the third paragraph, which begins, Highly Competent Psychiatrists. I'm going to read through the one full paragraph and comment on that paragraph. Today's readers, we have Diane M. on the 12 steps. We have Karen W. on the 12 traditions. And the readers of the text are Rena L., Nancy P., and Elena C. And then our newcomer greeter is Toby K., and the host for the second hour is Colleen M. Let me give, give you the share ID numbers for yesterday, Monday, May 6th. The 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 21,375. That's 21375. For the 10 a.m. meeting, 21,376, 21376. The OA preamble, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. We have no dues, we are or fees. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. We neither solicit nor accept outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. Basically, we don't take any position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors. And then we carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, and that is to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is compulsive overeating can recover from through abstinence, and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So now I'll ask Diane M. Diane, would you be kind enough to read the 12 steps? And Diane, go ahead and unmute yourself by pressing star one. We mute everybody, I think.
Oh, thanks. Hi, this is Diane M. from Massachusetts, compulsive overeater. Number one, the 12 steps admitted that we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And finally, 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Diane. Okay, now with the 12 traditions, Karen, how are you? Good morning to you.
Good morning. This is Karen W. from Katy, Texas. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA but never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. I'm definitely a compulsive overeater, and I thank you for allowing me to be of service, and I pass.
Thank you, Karen. Appreciate you. Okay, here's how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then we stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature that we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. I'll time everybody. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year. For readers, it's 6 months, and there is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read, and we are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. If you'd like to share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you're done sharing, let us know by saying, hey, I'm done sharing, or pass, or something like that, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And so today, we resume our study in the Big Book. We're in the chapter entitled There Is a Solution. We're on page 18, the third paragraph, which begins, highly competent psychiatrists, and we're just going to read through the one paragraph and comment on the one paragraph. So with that, let me hand this over to Rena L. to get us started this morning. Good morning, Rena.
Good morning. This is Rena L., a recovered compulsive overeater anorexic from Toledo, Ohio. Okay. Highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us have found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss his situation without reserve. Strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrist and the doctor. Oh, lots to say on this paragraph. What it got me thinking of, and what it gets me thinking of, is how much outside help I received before and even after coming through the doors of 12-step meetings. And this isn't an outside help. I still get lots of outside help. But I was sure that if I can just get to the deep issue in therapy or even in treatment, that would do it. And it didn't. As a matter of fact, sometimes it got worse. And I was thinking specifically of a place that, a treatment center, it was actually after already I had come to OA and I had gotten some relief and some abstinence. And then I had a relapse because I stopped doing the things I did in the beginning, of course. It's like any great addict, if something's working, I think I'll stop. And in treatment, not only did they feed me my very much red light foods for breakfast every morning, but on top of that, they were anti-12-step, and I snuck out even though I was paying to be there. This is powerless. I was paying to be there, and I snuck out to exercise even though I was struggling also with over-exercise. Snuck out to take walks every day. Showed up with exercise shoes specifically. And when I left the treatment center and still had not stopped binging round the clock, every time I left, I binged. They said, some are just hopeless. And I remember forgetting that there's a solution. And I felt so hopeless. I had just spent 30 days in treatment and couldn't stop. And 10 months later, I'm so grateful that 10 months later, in such pain and misery, it occurred to me like, oh yeah, OA. Like, oh yeah, 12-step recovery. And I forgot that I am without power. And outside helps with me with a lot of issues. And maybe even makes me care enough about what happens to me and myself to get back to meeting. But I need a source of power. Without power, I cannot stop hurting myself without food. And that is what this program gets me when I do what's suggested to me right out of the big book. So I'm so grateful for a solution today. I am grateful there's outside help. It's a key part of my program, but it's not the thing that helps me stop with the food. It doesn't. It gives me a better quality of life. It even gives me a better quality of recovery. And it even helps me set boundaries, all sorts of things. But it never helped me put down the food, not for one day. So I'm so grateful there's a solution and that it's right here. I'll keep coming back. Thanks.
Thank you so much for getting us started, Rena. And so we'll transition now to for 3-minute shares. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others may step in as well. We just respectfully ask that you kind of step back. So with that, if you would give me, again, page 18, the third paragraph is where we're at, and there is a solution. If you would give me your first name and last initial, who would like to share?
Katie G. from Boston.
Katie.
Melissa C.
Hey, Melissa.
Deborah M. from New York.
Deborah. Don't be shy.
Love you, honey. Sorry.
That's okay.
Ken W.H.
Hi, Ken.
Hey.
Anybody else? Okay, well, we got Katie and Melissa and Deborah and Ken. That's a good start.
10K okay. From Florida.
Was it Ken?
No, 10. T-A-N, 10K from Florida.
Oh, 10. I'm sorry, Tan. Yeah. I should know that. 10. Okay.
Thanks for the service.
All right, my pleasure. Okay, let's start with that. So we got Katie, Melissa, Deborah, Ken, and Tan. So let's start with Katie G, followed by Melissa C. Okay, Katie, you're up.
Good morning. Sorry, I'm unmuted.
Good morning.
I do love my husband. This is Katie G, recovered compulsive eater, anorexic and bulimic in Boston. And I guess what really struck me today is that I have a disease of shame, vagueness, and secrets. Ever since I was a little girl, I ate in secret. I got on the scale in secret. I snuck food in secret. I exercised in secret. And I had such shame. So when doctors would ask me, like, how much are you getting on the scale? I couldn't say anything. Or I could say, like, one time a day. I remember being in high school and there were vents, right, in the connecting the two bathrooms. I remember pulling the scale very quietly onto the floor and my mom going, Katie, because I couldn't tell anybody what was going on, you know, and my whole life, I remember first coming into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous and crying because people were telling my story. They were talking about the things that had been in my head, that had been in my life, solution that I had applied to my life that was not working. And also this idea, right, that if I'm thin, I'm going to be okay. And so what is so incredible was by hearing everybody's truths, I got to start speaking my own truth about the laxatives, about the Ipecac, about the diet soda, about the gum, about the obsession of the mind, about numbers on the scale that is so strong that I don't care that aspartame kills you. I don't care that cancer kills you. All I want is to be thin. And that is my sickness, right? But today, I have to ask myself, like, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, how honest am I being? And I have to tell you, I have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, and it starts with honesty. Because I, as a recovered woman, have gotten trapped in the dishonesties. Y'all know I got trapped in exercise bulimia. Anything that I'm not willing to say out loud is a problem, right? Or getting on the scale addictively. I had a whole mastermind chart. And the thing is, I had to be honest with another compulsive eater who wasn't going to say, oh my gosh, really? That's what you're doing? And I'm not saying that doctors and nurses and all those people, you know, they don't have a place, because for me, they also have a place. But the thing is, a woman who can tell me I used to exercise that much and I don't anymore, a woman who can tell me I too have ended up in the hospital because of my laxative use, that is freedom. And if I want to get to God, I have to be honest, because all dishonesty does is put a huge red flag on me that says, I don't want you, God. I can't hear you, God, because I'm playing God. And I can't play God. The whole answer to this program is following the 12 steps, getting a relationship with God, and being able to be me, right? I can settle into being me when I have no secrets, when I have no vagueness, when I am entirely abstinent, entirely clear on who I am and what I'm doing, and I'm not alone, which is a miracle. And with that, I pass.
Barry, are you muted?
Moderator,
Barry, we
can't hear you, Barry.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Now we got you.
Oh, look at that. I just decided to take a little break. No, I think I just got kicked off here. But okay, Melissa, how about that for a segue? You're up. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Oops, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, thanks. Hi, Melissa, stay recovered, compulsive overeater. I'm in New York, and, you know, when I read this and I think, yeah, nobody could persuade me to discuss my situation. You know, highly competent psychiatrist, I've gone to professionals, I've gone for outside help, and I remember sitting there thinking, you know, as I'm in therapy, please don't mention my weight, please don't mention my weight. Like, can we just talk about everything else? Except for, you know, this body that I was, like, dragging around in a lot of pain. And, you know, my experience with therapy and prior, right, prior to working with 12 steps, because I do believe that, you know, there's a place for outside help as well. And I have, you know, access help for different problems along my path. But it never did anything for me with this particular, you know, disease of compulsive overeating, because what I found was I was looking for therapists, and if you look for something, you tend to find it, who were interested in assigning blame, you know, for my problem. And all the therapy that I was actively involved in was all about getting to, why is it that I do, you know, why do you eat the way that you do? And a lot of it was centered around, you know, truth is, like, looking for fault with my upbringing, with my parents. And you know, did they make mistakes? Yeah, you know, but I'm a mom, and I've made many, many mistakes, and their intention was never to do me harm. And here's the thing, even if their intention was to do me harm, right, even if they were the world's worst parents in the whole universe and they were trying to hurt me, okay, that might be, you know, an interesting or something that I would need to understand. But as far as solving the problem of compulsive overeating, unless I'm going to get in a time machine and undo, you know, my past, the question isn't like, why are you like the way that you are, you know, as far as what did other people do to you, but what are you going to do about it? And, you know, my parents, my husband, my mother-in-law, anybody that loved me knew they had to step very carefully around, you know, they say the elephant in the room, right? And it's horrible to look at it with this, but they really had to be very careful. I was unapproachable. I was bristly. I would get angry. I would retreat. I would feel like I was being picked on. The only thing that worked for me, you know, was coming into the rooms where I met people who did what I did, but they weren't doing it anymore. And they were happy in their relief. And those were the people that I have found could approach me, you know. And when they approached me, the wonderful thing is they didn't approach me telling me that I was killing myself, that I'm making a mess of my life. But they told me that they had been killing themselves, that they had made a mess of their lives, and that they found a relationship with a power that helped restore them physically and spiritually. And so that's what has worked for me. And that's why we are able to make the approach with people, you know, but people have to be wanting and willing and ready to discuss their situation without reserve. If you reserve, it means you're keeping secrets, you're keeping things to yourself. And this program doesn't work if you keep secrets from one another. And I'm grateful to know that today. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Melissa. And Katie, gee, thank you also. I kind of tapped that iPad to touch the sensitive, so I kicked myself off. Okay, now let's move on to Deborah M., followed by Ken W. H. Deborah, good morning.
Yes, good morning. My name is Deborah M. from Western New York, and thank you, everybody, for your service. The outside help is, for me, it was my church. And I was told lovingly many times, go to the altar, pray, have another Bible study, all those things that I tried for many, many years. And my faith is still very, very strong. But it was, as far as the program goes, it was outside help. And it took me many years to divide the two somehow. But when I was able to do it in the 12-step, my faith got even stronger. I can just a quick story. I joined this study where this wonderful woman had videos and it was all about weigh in. You can eat anything, and there was always scriptures around it. And she would say, okay, now eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full. Pay attention to when you're full. And my everybody was losing weight. I was gaining weight because they said I could go and have a piece of chocolate. I could have these things that are red. I had no idea. But I remember the day that I said to my sister, and I was gaining, everybody else was losing, and so therefore I must be horrible. But I said to my sister, I don't know when I'm full. And she looked at me very strangely. And that was the beginning of something, knowing that I was different. I did not know when I was full. And so I just want to leave that where, outside help is great for so many things. It is critical. But when it comes to somebody who has this disease, the 12 steps is the only thing that I know that will work. And if I try to take the outside help and lay it over this disease, oftentimes it'll bring more shame because I see that my willingness or my power is not there. And so today I woke up, just asked for the gift of willingness and doing the next right thing, and so, so grateful. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Deborah. Okay, next up we have Ken W.H., followed by Tan. Good morning, Ken.
Thanks, Larry. Ken W.H. here, recovered compulsive eater from North Carolina. This is a paragraph I like to title, Liar, Liar, Pants on Fire. Without reserve. That means complete honesty and freedom and trust and opening myself up to all kinds of things that I may not want to hear and probably don't want to hear. I don't want to face myself. I didn't want to face myself, and that was the hardest thing I had to do. And outside help is good. It needs to be brought inside for me, inside of me. And I guess I need to invite that person, that professional, to bring the 12 steps into what they're doing as well. So I would look for someone that has that. I remember early on in my addictive recovery, being with a counselor and trying to assess my addictive nature or not, whether I had this thing. And we went through a whole process and talk. And finally she said, I don't think you're an addict. I don't think you're addicted. And I'm feeling really good about it at this point, because that's exactly what I wanted to hear, until my wife at that time came in and the counselor said, well, he's not an addict. And she said, what did he tell you? And that took care of that. This young counselor just didn't realize how much lying and hiding and shame and all of that was involved in my addiction. And I didn't tell her anything she needed to know to come to an assessment. I just lied my way through it. And I have found today that, yes, there is value in outside help, and that I'm in recovery in a 12-step program that works for me. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful and learning more and more every day to be just transparent and who I am, and free to tell the truth. What a concept, free to tell the truth. I was never that way. So I'm just grateful to be here and be abstinent and be able to share at this really good meeting. And I'll pass with that. Thanks, Larry.
Oh, you bet. Thanks, Ken. Okay, hold on, Tan, 1 second. I'm just going to tell people where we're at. Page 18 in the chapter, There is a Solution, the third paragraph. It begins, highly competent psychiatrists. And after we go get a tan in Florida, we'll take some more people to share. Tan, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for letting me share. Thanks for the service. Thanks for everyone who's on this call and listening and sharing. So, psychiatrists, therapists. I think before I explain or mention what kind of story I have with therapists, I think there's a time before OA and there's a time after OA with psychiatrists and therapists. So I think my first encounter was, because I'm also kind of workaholic and perfectionist, obviously, I had my first panic attack, which I didn't realize. And then after gaining 60 pounds in a matter of 6 or 7 months, I had my first encounter with a therapist. And I didn't say anything, obviously. I didn't even realize. I mean, for me, that weight thing was just stress. You know, I just ate because of stress, and that's it. So it was never a topic, actually. Then the second therapist I had after that, it was just about my mother. So so it was just about talking about the parents and everything, and it was really great. I talked about things that I never talked before, but I completely left the addiction part out. It was just a black hole. I mean, I wasn't aware of it, so I was not telling anything about it. Then after decades, I started to realize, okay, there's something with my weight. Maybe I don't have the right diet. I don't have the right behavior. I need to change my cognitive behavior. So I went out to find a therapist who's, you know, and behavior change, cognitive, and I said, I want to change my behavior, you know, I want to behave differently towards food. But he wanted to talk about my parents. So that was the third therapist. Then, you know, after December 2017, when I took all my red light foods, all my sweets out of the garbage and ate it, And when I realized, okay, there's something needs to change, I also had an encounter and went to OA and suddenly started to be able to talk and know that I'm not an alien, because before that I thought I'm an alien. I had an encounter with a therapist. I also had some, you know, stress-related issues. And this was a Jungian. And he said, oh, you're in OA. That's perfect. Just stay there. You know, that's all she said. So that's my four encounters with therapists. So it was very interesting. Exactly when I was open, actually, talk about, well, we talked about it, but she said, you know, I know what the OA is. It's the best thing. Just stay with it. So that's my four encounters with therapists, and basically the time before OA where I was an alien, and now in OA, I know that I'm a part of you and you are a part of me. So thanks a lot for sharing, letting me share in my past.
Thank you, Tan. Okay, let's take some more names. If you'd like to share on page 18, third paragraph, give me your first name and last initial.
Jessica R.
Carol L. Baltimore. From Florida. Marie Ellen G. Kathy J. Chicago.
Okay.
Did you get Rivka?
Yeah, I got Rivka, Carol, Marie Ellen, I believe it was, and Jackie.
Yes.
Who else?
Cheryl L. Cheryl L. Florida.
Cheryl L. Anybody else? Okay. So here's what I heard. Rivka, Carol, Marie Ellen, I believe, Jackie, and Cheryl L. Let's go with that list. And so if you're not Rivka, go ahead and mute your phone. And if you are Rivka, it's your turn, Rivka. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Larry. Thanks so much. Good morning, everyone. It's Rivka R., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Baltimore. Yeah, thank you, everyone, for these shares related to everything so much. So that, you know, just about not being honest, I remember once, you know, when I had been on this crazy weight loss scheme, shots and 500-calorie diet, and then I was supposed to transition to this maintenance, and I thought, you know, in my mind, you know, I told me it would be a great idea to go and buy everything I could possibly want to eat because I wasn't going to have it again, which was always the lie that I told myself. And I was, my stomach actually spasmed. I was in horrific pain, and you know, went to the doctor, and of course didn't tell him what I had done, because that would have been too embarrassing. He was working me up for all these like crazy diseases, and scans, but everything came back fine because all I had done was just so overextended my stomach that it just, you know, rebounded on me. But there were a few times that I was very honest about my symptoms. Like I went to a psychiatrist. I said, I'm here because, you know, I can't lose weight and I can't, I'm miserable with myself and he worked with me, said, you know, people struggling with this, he usually suggests that they go to OA, and I'm like, oh no, I don't want to do that again. I just want the insight that's going to cure me. Of course that didn't work. And I would be, you know, honest, I would, of course, always hide my eating from my husband, but I would be constantly lamenting about my body, which drove him crazy. And then one time he said, you know, you talk about yourself a lot. And like, all that did, of course, was make me absolutely furious with resentment, and I shut down from him. But he was the only one that really got close to the real problem, which was my self-centeredness. You know, and even all the years going in and out of program, like I knew I was an addict, I knew I had an allergy of the body and obsession of the mind, and, you know, and I completely, you know, just thought about food all the time. But I was just really, really deaf to the solution. Like that was the problem. Because it really meant humility, really meant stepping down and stepping away from my absolute obsession to control and be a victim and be right and really be able to hear. So after another relapse, and I just it took me a long time. I know God is very patient with me to open up and just, oh my gosh, the solution to my problem of me is God. Either I'm going to be self-centered or I'm going to be God-centered. And either God's going to be, you know, the solution in my life, which means I need to do every, my action might be, my, has to be in alignment with his will for me. And that brought me that level of humility and openness and willingness that, that created the miracle. So thank you all for being here on this journey. And I'm just so grateful today and have a blessed day. Thanks, I pass.
Thank you, Ripka. That was Ripka R. And we have Carol followed by, I believe it's Marie Ellen. And if you give your last initial, that would be helpful. Carol, good morning to you. Carol, press star one. Oh, Carol, press star one. Okay, maybe she's having some technical difficulties, or maybe I didn't hear Carol. So let's go with Marie Ellen, I believe it is, followed by Jackie. Marie?
Yes, good morning.
There
this is Marie Ellen G, and I'm calling from New York, Queens, New York. Thank you so much. I'm a compulsive recovered overeater, and I so appreciate this meeting and the reading, especially today, just struck me to share. You know, I also went for outside help to figure it all out. I am a licensed social worker, so I 100%, you know, believe in therapy, and it certainly did help me in understanding the lies I was believing about myself, the world around me, even my perspective of God. It just, it helped me in every way, except for stopping the compulsive overeating that I was doing, like everybody's saying. And I remember when I went to social work school and I was in an internship in a mental health clinic and I was learning how to do therapy with other people. And I remember I had a client who was a young, beautiful girl struggling with alcoholism. And they were talking to me about helping her through harm reduction. And I was suggesting that, you know, which is basically keep the substance in your life, but just limit it, you know, just do it on Saturday, just do it. And I did that for years with food. I would be like, okay, I'm going to be great during the week, and I'm going to just allow myself to have this on Sundays or on Saturday night with my friends or whatever. And of course, we all know what, you know, happened with that. So I went to OA back 20 years ago, and I sat in the rooms, but I never really heard the message, because in my heart, I kept thinking, God would never make me give up this substance. That's so mean. How could he create these things that I can't touch? And for some reason, I must have been ready 20 years later, after, you know, much pain in the food. He came and spoke with me. And what I realized is, oh, yes, yes, he would. He would ask me something like that, because he has something so much better, so much better. The relationship with him over the substance that I kept choosing that was blocking me. And so I just wanted to share that, yes, outside help helped me, but not in regard to putting that substance down and not in regard to how this program with so many other things, a template, really. And even church, I'm very involved in church, and I would hear, you know, in your anger, do not sin. Okay, wonderful. But when I'm angry, boy, watch out. So this program helped me in regards to getting close to God, which gave me the ability, or God gave me the ability, to put the substance down and set me free. Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much. Okay, Jackie, let's give Carol one more shot, chance here. Carol, are you available? Okay, maybe I was hearing things. So let's go with Jackie, followed by Cheryl. Jackie, good morning to you. Press star one, Jackie. All All right, we'll keep moving on here. Cheryl L., are you available? Am I 0 for 3 here?
You may have meant Kathy J., not Jackie. Kathy?
I'm sorry, say again?
Cheryl. Kathy J., rather than
okay.
Jackie.
Okay, that may be. Let's go with that. And then I did hear Cheryl after that. So go ahead, Kathy, your turn, and then we'll...
Kathy J., compulsive overeater in Chicago. And, you know, the thing about hitting bottom, I hit bottom in a treatment center where they were asking me questions about my weight, about how I felt about that, stuff like that. This went on for a long time. Pretty soon I was like, okay, I admit it, something's wrong here. And and I was in there, but they said to me, where the recovery is going to happen from this is in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. It's not going to happen here. So counseling was like 5 minutes with a counselor. The rest of the time was in groups and studying what an eating disorder is and isn't and what to do. And had a woman come in and talk about her experience with food. And, you know, it's not just lowering my guard because I hear other people are like, yeah, me too. It's also the secrets that are buried as to my reaction to the stuff that happened to me and my blaming and being able to admit that, you know, not just the things I did with food, but the things I did to other people, to myself. So that was the real recovery. Because if my emotional ups and downs of today are fueled by powerful, unresolved stuff from my history, you know, that's where I become powerless. So, you know, looking at that stuff, not to just talk about what my parents did or didn't do or somebody did or didn't do, but in the steps I learned how to face my part in it, how I react, and then what to do about that. You know, in 8 and 9, actually the miracle happened for me in 5 and in 9. And, you know, freedom from all that pent up emotion that drove me to eat, aside from the fact that if I ate certain things, I was powerless. I couldn't stop. So, yeah, therapists couldn't solve it. We did need people who, I needed people who knew what my language was. But then what? Even then what? Now I got to do something about myself. And the freedom came. Believe me, I just can't believe almost how much better my life is with a higher power who can help me through things in an intuitive way, like we talk about in the big book. So anyway, thanks for letting me share with that. I'll pass.
Thank you, Kathy J. Appreciate that. Okay, Cheryl, it's your turn. Good morning.
Good morning, Cheryl? Everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me? Okay. Sorry about that. I was driving earlier, so I kind of had a struggle there. My name is Cheryl. I'm a compulsive overeater, recovered for today. I live in Florida. And, you know, this whole thing about honesty, it was 1996 and I was in another program, or I hadn't actually entered my first recovery program, when a therapist asked me about that addiction. She asked me about my behavior. And I lied. I flat out lied, because at that point I knew I had an issue. I knew I had a problem. And then if I became honest with her, that I was going to have to face it, that she was going to make me deal with it. And I didn't think I was ready. I didn't think I was ready to deal with it. But the miracle that happened to me was that, you know, I was raised in a religion where honesty was so important. And I ended up coming home from that appointment and just really feeling totally upset with myself and just really, really sad. And that's what prompted me to make my first outreach call. And so honesty for me is really key. And, you know, with OA and with my eating, I had a relapse after 7 years of abstaining from compulsive eating, but not really doing a lot with the other parts of the program. And I ended up, I was lying. I was lying to myself. I was lying to the people who I knew in OA who were watching me. And I would hide from them, but then it came to a point where I couldn't even hide from them anymore. I couldn't hide my eating because it had gotten to a point where I just was out of control. And then that shame came back in. So honesty is just really key for me today. And I really work at being honest every single day, at looking at myself and looking at my behaviors and what's the lie that I'm telling myself. And I have to answer that question every single day as part of my view. And with the grace of God, with God's help and with listening to everyone on this meeting, I've been able to come to a greater awareness of what is the truth. You know, what is the, you know, what's the lie I tell myself and what is the truth that comes from God. And so with that, I'll pass. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Cheryl. Okay, we got time for perhaps about three more shares. Who would like to jump in?
Elizabeth D.
Elizabeth? Who else?
Judith S. P.
Judith?
Michelle M. Tulsa.
Okay, let's stop there. I've got Elizabeth, Judith, and Michelle. Okay, Elizabeth, it's your turn. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service. Can I be heard?
You can.
Okay, great. I'm a competent psychiatrist who have dealt with us. And then, you know, I can only speak for my own story. I'm a compulsive overeater. I can only share my own story. And for me, I was actually introduced to Overeaters Anonymous by a psychiatrist. She told me it would be the best free therapy I would ever get. This was in 1988, and it was at a time when therapists all over the country were seeing that managed care was coming and that they weren't going to be able to give time to their patients that they wanted to, and they saw the 12-step rooms as a solution, as group therapy. And that's a big part of my story. I'm exceedingly grateful to that psychiatrist who pointed me toward OA. And I know there are, you know, psychiatrists and mental health counselors who don't buy into the 12 steps, and that's fine. But for me, I can tell you that it's always been my best approach to this has been an integrated approach, which involves therapy and the 12 steps. I can't do one without the other. And I'm not, you know, espousing an outside thing, saying that this has always been the most helpful for me. And I just really am incredibly grateful for what I have found here. Ultimately, the 12 steps have shown me, have given me the power that I needed. The counselor couldn't get to that piece, to the spiritual piece. I needed a spiritual piece, a spiritual power that would get me out of my self-seeking and my selfish behavior and thinking, even when I was pretending and thinking I was being kind to other people, when in fact, I was just trying to get what I wanted. But, you know, when I walked into that psychiatrist's office the first time, I knew that this was about honesty. I don't know, something inside me, I think it was the God inside me just said, you know what, just lay it all on the line. And I did. And that was 35 years ago. And by the way, I went to an event and she was there and I hadn't seen her in 35 years. And we had this hug and I said, thank you for pointing me to the 12 steps because you and the 12 steps saved my life. And I'm has given me the happy life that I imagined I could have. And I'm very grateful and appreciate the opportunity to share. Thank you. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Okay, next up we have Judith SP for Super Polite. Hey, Judith, good morning.
Wow, thank you, Larry. That's wonderful. I'm going to carry that all day. Hi, my name is Judith SP from Maryland. Thank you, God. I'm so grateful to be here. And I have to honestly say that this paragraph was real confusing to me. So I greatly appreciate the perspective that many have had. There are a lot of words in this paragraph I would really be able to talk about for quite a while, but I probably only have 2 minutes and whatever left. So impossible to persuade. I think of that in my own recovery, that it is impossible for someone to persuade me. Whether you're a sponsor, whether you're a fellow, whether you're a psychiatrist, whether you're a person on the street asking me for money, nobody really can persuade me to do anything. I have to take that first step. And just briefly, when I was 29, I was in a hospital for a year and a half for suicide and lots of ridiculous type of attempts, but really didn't want to live anymore. So I highly regard and I'm so grateful to the therapeutic world for helping me move from one stone to the other, closer to where I am today. So I do believe they were part of my journey, and I'm truly grateful. But it is impossible for anyone to persuade me. I'm also struck by the fact that that parents, friends, and others find us unapproachable. And that reminds me of the tradition, attraction rather than promotion. I can't tell anybody. There are many people, both who are suffering outside of these rooms, and the elation I feel from being recovered that I'd like to share with people. But I know I just need to put one foot in front of the other and take care of my recovery. And that's what this program gave me. It opened the door for me to find a way to become familiar and grateful for who I am. And all the people that have been in my life beforehand are here now, and God willing, will be here as we move forward. I just want to embrace, and I really will just say the other thought that came to my mind with this paragraph is contempt before investigation, that I have to be open and available to anything and everything after I consider and put thought in, is this right for me? The only way I know that is turning to God. I have to bring God into this. So thank you for letting me share, and it was extremely enlightening for me today. Thank you. I pass.
Oh, thank you, Judith. Okay, let's wrap it up with Michelle. Good morning, Michelle. Michelle, star one, please. Okay, maybe Michelle's having some technical difficulties there. Would someone like to wrap us up with a final 2 minute share?
I will.
I will. Next up is I will. Good morning.
Hello. Can you hear me? Good morning. This is Marcia D in Ohio, gratefully recovered. Great shares today. As I was hearing everyone talk, I realized it was in the mid-80s that my Abby came to me in an eating disorder treatment center. It was a counselor who recommended OA. And because of her, all these years later, here I am. So I have a lot of gratitude for that. Sadly, though, since that time, I have really found eating disorders care outside the rooms to be lacking, and that's just my opinion, no one else's. But at any rate, I do think it is good to carry the message and to help professionals understand the value of OA, and any chance I get, I do share about that with people, because there's a lot of myths and misunderstandings about who we are and what we're about in the rooms. And so besides that, though, I also realized I had a biochemical problem. And again, this is just me, but I needed outside help, and mainly medicine, and that has helped me tremendously. And I had a lot of shame about that, a lot of fear about that. But because of that, I was able to stabilize my mood and more fully benefit from recovery and everything I've learned. So that's all I wanted to share. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Thanks, Marcia. Hey, Michelle, I'm so sorry. There's a little technical glitch there. If you'd be kind enough to hang around the second hour, we'd love to hear from you, Michelle. So thanks for your patience. But in any case, thank you to everyone who's participated today. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study that will immediately follow our closing. Let me give you the share ID for today's meeting. That number is 21,378. That's 21378. And we are now going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164. We're going to follow that with a serenity prayer. So, Nancy P., would you be kind enough to read that for us?
Yes, I will. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.